Please allow me, friends, to introduce myself. I'm your girl next door from Indiana, with my dreams still on a shelf. Haven't seen too much of anything.
Welcome to Fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, and thanks for joining us once again for episode 5 of All the Vegas, presented by Las Vegas Weekly Magazine. You know me, I'm Brock, entertainment writer guy. I am here at my favorite place, the space just off the world famous Las Vegas Strip, home of the iconic and joy-inducing show Monday's Dark, my favorite show. Wow. With me, of course. You like that?
Iconic.
Iconic.
You like iconic better than joy-inducing?
I don't know. Grow every time.
I had all these visuals when you said joy inducing. It really paints
the idea.
A picture.
Wow. Thank you. Thanks for the compliments. With me, of course, is the man who used to be Las Vegas's favorite Canadian. Now I would say maybe top five still, maybe. Mark Chinook. It's been a while since we've been in here podcasting.
Well,
we took a little break.
We've been busy, bro.
We've been busy VGKing.
I'll take it. We're almost done. Mission almost accomplished. Four games to go.
Thanks,
our guest
Mark.
Today, though. Wow.
Our guest today is one of the brightest talents on the Strip right now and the star of a brand new original musical production opening at the Paris Theater. It's called Marilyn, the New Musical. It's an exploration of obviously one of Hollywood's greatest icons, Marilyn Monroe, and it's pretty much, I would say, the buzziest and most anticipated show on the Strip right now. The reason we're so excited about it is sitting in this room with us. Ruby Lewis, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Truly a pleasure. This is pretty cool, guys.
The preview shows are happening like in a few minutes.
Today, yes.
What are you, what's
day.
Going through your head right now? How are you feeling right now?
Right now I'm just going through the sequence of the show in my head, because I finish a scene generally and then I've got about 10 seconds to change my costume and then go to the next scene, and that happens between every scene. So luckily, like, the costumes dictate what scene comes next, so I've got that working for me. So as long as they throw something on me, then I know what I'm doing. But it's been a short rehearsal period for building a show from the ground up, per se. So I'm still getting my footing, really. I feel pretty grounded in it, but I'm excited for an audience, excited to see what works, you know, what doesn't work. It's still a process.
I didn't even think about costuming for this show. That's going to be incredible.
My costumes are so beautiful.
I've seen the pictures.
They took to a T, and they replicated the 7-year itch white dress, the Subway Great dress, like to a T. And we have the Subway Great, and it flies. It goes flying. So hopefully I don't forget to wear my underwear during that scene. And the Diamonds
really
Are Girls' Best Friend.
I didn't
change. I almost did yesterday.
I was going to say something. You and I looked at each other.
I almost did yesterday.
You're going to say something, or am I going to say something?
It's not that I wouldn't have anything on. It's just it wouldn't look good. You know,
that's
like,
the show,
oh, wow,
we do at the space.
At
not
pantyhose.
At
but yeah, the costume design is amazing. The wig design is insane. I literally look like her. It's pretty trippy.
So much to talk about with Marilyn. Let's backtrack a little bit.
Okay.
Start kind of at the beginning. You are from a place called Shelbyville in Kentucky, which sounds like a made-up place that somebody would imagine if they were writing a story about someone who's from a small town.
Yeah, the rival town, right? It's the rival town to Simpsonville. Or is it called Simpsonville on The Simpsons?
Oh, Springfield.
Springfield.
Yeah. Shelbyville is the rival town. That's, you know, and that's, we're pretty... pretty bad. Can I say ass on here?
You can say whatever you want. It sounds like a movie.
We're pretty bad.
A movie
ass,
setting,
Shelbyville.
Right? Like Friday. What's the movie with all the women? With Julia Roberts. With all the women. The film.
Steel Magnolias.
Shelbyville. It sounds like because her name was Shelby.
Her name's Shelby.
Ah, I knew.
And
that
in my hometown, like my dad, for instance, he's got a real thick accent, so you don't say Shelbyville. You say Shovel.
Quick.
Shovel.
I have a family in Louisville.
Yeah, I say Louisville.
Yeah, they work for Maker's Mark.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
She does all the marketing for Maker's Mark. Maybe she can
send us booze.
Wow,
she does a good job.
I was going to say, why is Maker's Mark not the sponsor of the show?
I'm calling her tomorrow. I just thought of it right
now.
Darn, yeah. You can go there and dip the bottle.
Yeah,
you know,
custom dipped.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
What if I dipped the bottle and then I coated it in rhinestones?
Maybe we could do a Marilyn Maker's Mark. That'd be good. What did Marilyn drink?
Triple M. She drank champagne.
Champagne, okay.
Yes, what's Dom Perignon.
Dom. Well, we'll call our boys over at Southern, and we'll see if we can get some Dom for Maryland's.
Come
opening.
On, boys.
I think we need it.
I like the marketing that's going on right now.
Yeah, yeah. Brainstorming.
But just, I'm brainstorming ideas left and right, you know?
We'll get it. We'll get it done.
What is the real Shelbyville like?
It's really quiet in a small town. You know, my mom and dad both grew up there. My mom's family owned the department store in town, Lawson's Department Store, and they would outfit the whole town, furniture, clothing, everything. And I was born, my grandfather, you know, Jack Lawson, ran the department store, and he threw a parade through downtown when I was born with pink balloons. Like, it was a very quintessential, really small town experience. And I, you know, this the Methodist
like
Church.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I think we just wrote a script.
Mm-hmm.
Shelbyville.
Everyone get a pink balloon parade or just you?
It was just me. Yeah, it was like a pretty silver spoon moment. I do realize that. But anyway, I love going back there. And it's like, you know, my House Hunters episode aired the other day and my dad makes a little appearance. He, much to his chagrin, he did not want to do it. He refused to get mic'd up. But they were like, come on. I was like, Dad, you're here. Come on. Like, at least take a box out of the truck or something. So sure enough, it's just him taking a box, an empty box, out of the truck. But his space work was brilliant. You know, he acted like there was really something in there. And he was shouted out on the street. He was flagged down at the gym the next day.
That's
and he
awesome.
Texted me. He's like, well, you would have thought, you know, I'm just the cock of the walk here now and all this stuff. And so, yeah, people are really, really supportive of me there. That's my whole fan base is there. It's pretty cool.
It was worth doing House Hunters to make your dad reality house shopping show famous.
He's getting his own show. He's getting a spinoff.
Yeah. He could have a spinoff, truly. Yeah. But my mom, you know, she kind of gets the spotlight a lot of times as in my interviews and stuff. So I'm really glad that he got his shout out because he deserves it.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Big family, small family, parents made you go on stage at a young age. How did this whole thing get started?
I think I just took to it myself, but my parents met in the theater. It was a really cute story. My mom was playing Marion the Librarian at the community theater, and she was directing The Music Man, and my dad was volunteering his time to run sound and lights, and he thought she was just such a pain in the ass, but they kind of just like hit it off, and I guess they were around like 29, 30, and they got together, and both had previous marriages, but it was just cute. They met in the theater, and then I took to it. I think my first solo in church, I was 2 years old, and I was in dance, and I just kind of kept going. They didn't force me. They weren't really stage parents. A lot of times they weren't even there for my performances and stuff. And I learned how to do my own hair and makeup because my mom didn't do that. So it was all me. I just loved it. Loved it, kept doing it.
And that is the movie.
It really does sound like there's going to be a Vegas show about your life at some point. Someone else will. It'll be called Shelbyville.
It'll be called Shelbyville.
I can see it. It's kind of like Waiting for Guffman, kind of like...
I love Guffman.
Yeah.
Did you, while you were becoming a performer and growing up, was there a time when you wanted just to be an actor or just to be a singer or...
Yeah.
How did things kind of shake out the way that they have?
I was thinking about, you know, how they ask you to say, where will you be in 5 years or 10 years when you're in school? And I was thinking about that the other day. And I always said I wanted to be a choreographer. So I was really passionate about my dance there for a while, and I would sing. And I didn't even call myself an actor until just a few years ago. Like, I thought it was a pretentious term, and I have never done a Shakespeare play, and I'm like, I'm not an actor. I'm a performer. I would always say, I'm a performer. So now I consider myself an actor and singer and a dancer, but I guess, you know, when I went off to college, I was going to go for video journalism to start. So it was never anything that I was like, you can't be an adult and do this. This is just fun kids stuff. But I kept doing it, and, you know, you just keep doing it. It's kind of weird. I'm like, well, yeah, I'm still here doing it. And I enjoy it a lot, so that's good. Yeah.
And you did, before you came to Las Vegas to perform in shows, you did some pretty significant TV and film stuff. Did that, was that kind of unexpected, or how did, was that?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I don't know. Now that I've looked back on my television credits, I think a lot of the stuff that I booked, this is going to sound terrible, but I booked because of my boobs. Every single one, I had to like have them out, and the scene was kind of about them. Like in Desperate Housewives, the scene was about the boobs. Felicity Huffman was all been out of shape, but when we were shooting it, she's like, they're not big enough. I'm supposed to say that they're not God-given and they look natural. And so they kept like putting more and more bras on me, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. And then, you know, Masters of Sex, it was all about the boob hanging out because I was like a virginal nurse. And then, oh, my first one, medium, I was death by asphyxiation. I had like a bag over my head, but I was in my bra and underwear, and the guy's like snapping pictures. It was one of Patricia's flashbacks. And I'm going back, I'm like, oh my God, every single one. Every single one. I'm like, I kind of do feel like Marilyn. I feel objectified. But I was paying the bills at the time.
It's great.
So, tis what it is. I even, after one of the bookings, I created a website for my boobs. And then I checked the analytics and nobody cared. I thought people were going to be Googling it.
They will now.
They will now. That's right.
What was your, was there a TV gig that was particularly rewarding for you, or that you enjoyed?
Desperate Housewives was pretty crazy because I worked with Felicity Huffman on two episodes and it was just us. And she really did help me out a lot as far as, you know, when you're first on set, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go, how it worked. And she really took me under her wing. I feel like the same with Lizzie Kaplan on Masters of Sex. I just so happened to be in the makeup trailer with her, and she was able to ease my mind about the nudity. She's like, oh, I was first nude on True Blood, but I mean, you've got it easy. You get to be all coy and bashful. I was like bouncing up and down like joyfully in my first nude scene. I'm like, yeah, you're right. That's worse. So I was just constantly had women especially who were there to kind of hold my hand and walk me through it. But working with Felicity Huffman was amazing. She's really brilliant. And working with David Spade, I got to work with him too. That was cool. We talked a lot about Jersey Boys. He was the Jersey Boys fan.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
And I had just come off the tour or something. Yeah.
He probably wanted to play Frankie because he's so short.
Yeah. He's like, that's one role I could do.
Frankie Valli, David Spade. Two names you'll never hear in the same sentence.
That is an odd casting choice. So when you finally came to Las Vegas, because clearly it was destined to be, when you came to Las Vegas, it was for Baz, which originally opened in a nightclub space at Light at Mandalay Bay. Since it has found probably a much more appropriate home at the Venetian in the lovely theater. And it's an amazing show. And I know me and Mark both are always telling people they have to go see this show. What was special about that show for you?
I'm so proud of the show, and I've been through a few incarnations of it now, but just the fact that, you know, it continued to grow and progress and gain notoriety and stuff from just a tiny little space in LA. It was, for me, just, I felt like I was in a really good theater company and we were really making some stuff happen. And so that, for me, I didn't necessarily want to come to Vegas for the summer and do a show in a nightclub, but I didn't have anything else lined up. And I was like, you know, I love the show enough and I love this company enough that I'm going to do this for the summer. And, you know, I had no idea that it was going to lead to Broadway, and it was going to lead to, I got to perform with Human Nature, and I got to come back and perform over at the Palazzo again. And it's just been all meant to be. So I give so much credit to that show and to my For the Record peeps, Shane and Steve and Chris and Anderson. Man, they really opened a lot of doors for me through that For the Record.
They're great. I've been friends with those guys for a long, long time. And, you know, I remember singing with the For the Record gang Well, actually, it was the Upright Cabaret Gang, I think, back mm-hmm. in the day at Mark's on La Cienega in L.A. Mm-hmm. It was an upright piano and this weird restaurant bar, and they just had a way of bringing some of the best talent in L.A. together to sort of, and you checked your ego at the door, man. You'd be sitting in this goofy restaurant, and beside you would be, you know, who knows, the who's who of the theater community that had been transplanted to Los Angeles, that were mm-hmm. now doing film and television. And, you know, they're New Yorkers and past Broadway stars who are now starring on television shows, singing their faces off in this random room. And mm-hmm. what For the Record has been able to accomplish in such a short amount of time is amazing. And what you said about the whole, you know, theater company element where they're just creating artistic cool shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's about. And you don't care where it's being done. And that's sort of what, you know, we try to do here at the space, is we're this stupid location in a random warehouse, but when you leave, you know, you just saw some cool shit. And that's what For the Record's all about. Everything they do, whether it's the Scorsese show or the Hughes show, and, you know, obviously the Baz Luhrmann piece, they're all just really cool and really different, and you leave going, man, that was badass. So I'm mm-hmm. thrilled that it's still here and still kicking.
Me too. So proud of them.
It's so different from other Vegas shows. I mean, what you were just saying, it's not easy to do that. It's not easy to be original in that creative space and find a home on the Strip, because mm-hmm. there's so much out there, and so much of what you do has to appeal to a certain broad audience.
Yeah, mm-hmm. convincing. I think a lot of this game in producing is convincing. You got to mm-hmm. get people on your team. You got to get them to believe in your vision. But what they have going for them is so unique and so clever and so different that the convincing is just come and see the show. And if you're not convinced, mm-hmm. you didn't see the show.
Yeah, the proof is in the pudding.
Pretty much, you know, and that's a testament to the talent that they bring together and the creative, you know, with mm-hmm. the directors that they hire. And
I feel the same way about Maryland. I'm so excited for people to see it, because this company that we have assembled is really blowing me away. The dancers are so phenomenal. I think that it's going to be, I mean, it could be in a black box theater and it's going to be amazing, but the design team, I mean, everything's going to be really beautiful. So I'm excited for Vegas. I think
the timing is spot on for, I think, for it. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a time when we had, you know, four Broadway shows running and none of those shows are here yet. The talent that were a part of those shows, you know, I'm one of those guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I chose to continue to stay in Las Vegas as opposed to going back to New York or Los Angeles. And so what Maryland has going for it is a pedigree of incredible Broadway talent, some from New York, some from L.A., but a majority of them from Vegas, alum from various shows that were on the Strip. And, you know, I'm glad that, you know, hey, I brought you to this thing. You know, when I think about it, you know, Tegan was like, who's this girl in Baz? And I'm like, bro, just go see the show. And that's how this started. I told Tegan, I said, buddy, just go see Baz and go see Ruby and then just call me. He didn't even wait. It was 15 minutes into the show and he sent me a text and he said, thank you for sending me to Baz. I think we found our Maryland. I was like, yeah, duh. So, you know, I take credit for Ruby.
I give you credit.
Yeah,
I think you do.
10%.
You do need to work on your Tegan impression, though. That was not. I know you can do better than that.
Mock come here. That's not very good either. My British accent's ridiculous.
The Tegan in question is Tegan Summer. He's the
creator,
really, yeah. Producer, director of Maryland, and he is developing other shows for Las Vegas as well. But when I talked to him recently, Ruby, he said that you said that this is your dream role,
mm-hmm.
pretty much, which is not a surprising thing to say. It's Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
Why is she important to you? Well, has she been an influence on you, or that connection?
I think I told myself my dream was always to originate. I always want to originate a role. I don't want to back up, you know, be the fifth Glinda. And I really wanted to do something autobiographical, because I just wanted to, it was going to be super challenging. And it wasn't really until I realized I'd gotten the part and I started doing my research on Maryland that I was like, whoa, this is my dream role. You know, it wasn't like something as a child. I'm like, I really want to play her. Now that I am old enough to really understand everything that she went through and even relate to a few of the things, I am connecting to it in such a crazy way that it hasn't been very difficult for me to kind of drop into her space, like her mind space. And that to me is like what you want, because I'm going to really be able to do my show like artistically and hopefully do right by her and hopefully leave people with an impression of who she really was, and not parody it and not, you know, mock anything. And just, I really want it to be honest. And that's important to me as an artist performer. I feel like, you know, that's my job, is to entertain, but also to enlighten in a way, you know, and inspire. So I think that this show does that, and this role allows me to do that and really sink my teeth into something that I feel like I've been training for this my whole life, between the dancing and the singing and the, you know, on camera stuff that I've done. And I mean, everything has led to the now. So I'm in my dream now. I feel like I'm in my dream. It's cool.
I think Marilyn is a personality. Obviously, everybody is familiar with her, but like you said, I think there's a lot of her story that the average showgoer might not know. Mm-hmm. And there's education's probably not the right word, but there's a lot of detail about her life in this show.
Yeah, there's a lot beyond the tabloid, and I think a lot of people just know the tabloid. So we show what goes on behind closed doors, and it's very eye-opening and very real, and everyone's going to relate. It's something, you know, that a lot of people have been through, be it pressure at work or, you know, problems at home with the relationship. It's jealousy, whatever. We touch on everything. It's a very human story. She was the ultimate humanist, I think, now that I've researched her.
And there's a ton of original music in this show. There's some of those, you know, I'm assuming there's going to be Happy Birthday, Mr. President, and the songs that we identify with Marilyn so strongly, but so much new stuff.
Yeah, the vast majority of it is brand new, but it doesn't even feel like it's brand new. It feels like, is this from something, you know, in the 60s? I feel like I recognize this song, but it's a new song. It just, it all fits in the genre of that, the golden age, and it's just brilliant, in my opinion. I mean, the lyrics, everything really moves the story forward. It's the perfect Broadway show.
Is there a particular song that you are looking forward to performing most?
Well, Tegan and Gregory Neighbors sat down and wrote this song for me, which is like an Adele anthem. And I had the chance to sing it at the Composer Showcase a couple weeks ago. And I just, like, it is my ultimate 11 o'clock number. It comes at, like, 7:35, I think. But it is the ultimate 11 o'clock. And it's just, like, you know, I like to feel like I am, like, raising the ground beneath me and, like, levitating when I sing. I just, selfishly, I really like that kind of song, to just, like, really grit into it and bare my soul. And I get to do that with this one, and I get to be barefoot while I do it. And I just finished a big fight scene where I just threw all kinds of crap at Joe DiMaggio, and I'm kicking. And, you know, I just feel like I get to get out a lot of angst and rise again. It's like the Phoenix song, everybody's dream song. Everybody needs a Phoenix song. It's going to be the song that all the kids are singing at their auditions. It's powerful. It's pretty epic. It's called Time of My Life, parentheses, I Deserve More. Yeah. We have big plans for it, too. I'm really hoping it's going to go viral. People are going to freak about it.
I'm a big fan of songs with parentheses in the title. Mm-hmm. I just think that really pushes it over the top. If you can put that in your song title, you should.
I agree. I'm a fan of long song titles.
Shelbyville, the film with soundtrack.
Shelbyville, you thought you knew, but you don't.
Exactly.
I'm just excited that there's a new Broadway-style musical coming to the Strip. I mean, it is an ambitious undertaking. There's not a ton of these kinds of shows happening right now, unfortunately. But
I think now's just a great time. You know, the baby boomers are who I'm thinking about, because there's a lot of them. and they have money. And this is perfect for the baby boomers. The baby boomers don't want to go see a DJ. I can't even think of a Marshmello or whoever. They want to see.
It's good.
They want to see a glitzy, glamorous show that maybe takes them back to, you know, it's going to be super nostalgic for a lot of people.
It's definitely Vegas. You know, she spent a lot of time here.
Yeah, she spent so much time at the Peppermill Lounge, and I love Peppermill. I loved doing my research. She and Frankie were hanging out all the time and, you know, schmoozing.
We're excited from a space standpoint as well, not to keep bringing up the space, but, you know, we workshopped this thing here. And to have our building be a year old and already have a show sort of come out of this venue is a cool thing, you know. And I've been a part of this little process for a little while now, and Tegan and I have known each other for 20-some-odd years, and it's going to be neat to see this progress and the journey. And, you know, I do think the timing is right for the show on the Strip. It's coming at a time when there's really not much going on. So, you know, as a little guy who has a little voice in this game, we'll hopefully we'll create enough buzz and sell a bunch of tickets and make sure the right people see it, and it'll be great. I think it's just such a cool piece, and I can't speak volumes. I can't speak enough about the people involved. From the cast to the crew to the creatives, it's the right group of people, and I'm so proud of them. And, you know, I'm just honored to be a part of it in such a small way. And it's going to be exciting to watch this thing grow in the next couple of months, because previews are exciting, but it's also an opportunity where things can, like you mentioned earlier, what works, what doesn't work, what needs to move, can we push this somewhere else, let's cut that because that doesn't work, let's add this because this will work. And you learn a lot from your audience, and audiences are smart. You know, sometimes we don't give them enough credit as performers. We got to listen a little bit. And you know, you're great at that. You've been doing this a long time, and I think the audience will tell us a lot about this show, and I'm excited to see these next couple weeks. So
me too. I think it's going to be interesting nurturing the piece into what it's meant to be.
Yay.
Yay.
Yeah, so many shows that are in Vegas now, you know, they come from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the case with the, obviously with the Broadway stuff that we've had here before. So it's just, it's exciting to have a show that was really kind of developed, born in Las Vegas, mostly finding a home on the Strip. And I'm also curious to see how the character of Marilyn plays with different generations now.
Right.
Like you said, obviously the baby boomers are going to flock to this thing. But, I mean, everybody knows the iconography of Marilyn Monroe, and it seems like it would be a cool opportunity for younger audiences to
totally
find out more about her.
I think so. She was so ahead of her time, and even though she played the ditzy blonde, every time it was tongue-in-cheek, she was nodding to the fact that she knew what she was doing. And I think that, you know, using that power, you know, it can be very empowering for young women to realize, no, you can write your ticket. You can know, like, where your power lies, and you can write your ticket. And, you know, hopefully you surround yourself. I think the problem Marilyn had is she wasn't able to surround herself with good people to keep her down to earth. You know, I think my best friends from Kentucky, they keep me down to earth. My best friend the other day, I had posted, I'm just on this Instagram really into, like, the grid to where it looks really cool on my page. But, you know, you'll get, like, a hand or, like, a little fingernail or something in one of them. And my best friend texts me. She's like, OMG, OMG, OMG. I cannot with these grid photos that you put on Instagram. I just spent 3 minutes scrolling my Instagram, and all I saw were parts of your body. I'm so over it. And I was like, okay, fine. You know, like, call me out on it. It's fine.
I don't like them either. Delete that shit.
If there's a way to hide, like, the ones that I don't want people to see. But on my actual page, it looks cool.
It looks really cool.
But anyway, yeah. Is she, you know, it's just going to be a lesson to how to pursue your dream, how to rise up out of, you know, hardship, and hopefully how to keep yourself sane and keep yourself happy and well, too, because it's a slippery slope. this fame, you know, fame and fortune, I think.
Whatever that is, fortune, like. I don't know about that part. I'm famous, but fortunate.
Very, but it also means something different to everyone. And I think I'm excited because there definitely is a great message here with this show. And whether you, I think with, we talked about the younger generation, it's a great big old Broadway musical coming mm-hmm. to Vegas. And that alone right there is going to bring some of our younger folks to see it. And they're going to learn about Marilyn, but there's a great message here. And, it's a perfect showroom for it as well over at the Paris. You know, it was home to Jersey Boys for a long time. And when you walk in, it's just that beautiful traditional red theater. And it's going to fit the show very, very well. And people love going to the Paris. And the Caesars Entertainment guys have done a great job of you know, taking what started over here on Polaris and Harmon to a whole new level and blowing it up. And that's been so exciting to watch. Seeing billboards start to appear and mm-hmm. posters and signs and people talking about, what's this Marilyn thing that's coming? That's good. That's the good energy that we're starting mm-hmm. to hear. And I'm excited.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
It feels like people are really behind it, which is good. You know, you don't like to go into something with everyone wishing you would fail. So it doesn't feel like that at all. It feels like everyone's really cheerleading us. So I hope we do everybody.
You're going to do great.
Do justice, yeah.
And Vegas knows you pretty well now, Ruby. You've been here for a few years. You went mm-hmm. away. You came back.
Yeah.
Do you feel like – what's your adjustment to living in Las Vegas again been like? Do you feel like this is home now? Have you become mm-hmm. comfortable and kind of found your tribe and all that stuff?
I'm trying so hard to get comfortable. I bought a house that I love. Gladys Knight owned it in the 70s. It was built in 65, and it's had a lot of problems. So I've been like – since I bought the house in October, I've been in like construction mode. And even last night, you know, after a 12-hour day, my contractor's there and he's like, Ruby, I want to show you something. I'm like, I just want to have a glass of wine. And, you know, that's been my life. And I'm so excited for my house to be done so that I can really settle. But I'm really looking forward to that. And it's easy for me to relax here. It's not easy for me to relax in LA or New York. And now that I'm 33, I want to freaking relax. I like pushed it through my 20s. I toured a lot.
Jeez.
What? Oh, geez.
But I agree with you 100%. I spent, you know, like yourself, I spent a lot of time in New York City, a lot of time in LA. And when we were doing Rock of Ages out here, we literally would be in the middle of the show. And there'd be those nights where you're just like, oh, God, again. You know, because mm-hmm. you do 8 shows a week. And we'd get backstage, and the motivation was always, and this is not in an arrogant or, you know, cocky kind of way, but we'd say to each other, hashtag #2-car garage.
Mm-hmm.
And all that is a gentle reminder that in New York City and Los Angeles, to have a 2-car garage, you need to be, you know, a Wall Street gazillionaire. You know, like there's no 2-car garage in Manhattan when you're walking to the Broadway district. There's no 2-car garage in Los Angeles unless you're, you know, Steven Spielberg or your, you know, 13 episodes a week.
Yeah.
Or 13 episodes a year on making $100K an episode.
Yeah.
You know, I've had friends star on television programs, buy a house in LA. 2-3 years later, the television program gets canceled and they literally have to sell their home because mm-hmm. it's so expensive to live in California. And, you know, it's a challenge. Vegas, man, we're good.
Yeah, we're golden.
We're good.
I just hope that we're literally golden. I just hope that people from California stay away. Just like let us have our let us have this.
No, it's all good. I think what's happening is exciting with, you know, obviously pro sports
totally.
Now in Vegas, shows starting, new original works being developed and created out of Vegas, moving to the Strip.
The arts district is freaking cool. There's fashion, there's art. I mean, the Smith Center is beautiful. I consider myself a Vegas local through and through now. I'm super psyched to be here.
Yeah, and you know, like we mentioned, there's more new on the horizon. There's always mm-hmm. new. Brock talks about it all the time with chefs that mm-hmm. got their start on the Strip in a great restaurant and then opened their own place off the Strip. And you know it. We only go to the Strip for work. you know, we let our tourists take care of the Strip, and mm-hmm. locals who make it go, make it go. But we all have places to go and things to see. And that's what makes this city so exciting. And, you know, I remember when my dad was coming here. My dad's 80 years old. He was coming when there was maybe, 600,000 people was the population of Vegas, maybe 500,000. I don't remember exact numbers, but now we're 2.3 million. It's a cool spot.
Yeah.
And we call it the entertainment capital of the world, and it's because of people like you who come to Vegas. So this is fun.
There was, for some reason, when I was younger, some sort of a negative connotation behind coming out to Vegas to do a show. And now that I'm here, I really don't. Maybe they were just trying to keep it all to themselves, the people.
That's a question for you, Brock. What would you say changed that? Celine? Celine saying, I'm going to do a residency in Vegas to change that? Because I do agree with that. There was like, oh, I go to Vegas to die as an mm-hmm. entertainer. But that's yeah. not the case now.
That stigma that you just described, definitely Celine.
Yeah.
Celine changed that, and then everybody that copied that blueprint
mm-hmm.
has Sound just line. Brought new dimensions to it. You know, artists from different eras and things yeah. like that. The Britneys and whatnot.
Yeah. That's so true. And Lady Gaga, I'm just like, hell yeah, I'm going to be performing across the street from Gaga. Like, there's nothing negative about that.
Stevie Wonder's coming to the park. Mm-hmm. Like, the programming at these, I call them the mega venues or our big concert venues, you know, the Zappos Theater at Planet Hollywood, the Park Theater, the Coliseum at Caesars. These are, I think, the three major, you know, headliner venues now. And what's amazing is that eclectic lineup of A-list performer. It could be A-list from this genre, A-list. It doesn't matter. They're coming here and they're putting on world-class, over-the-top entertainment. We consider them big venues, but they're intimate venues, considering these entertainers normally do coliseums and stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
So to see Bruno Mars at the park with 4,000 people is ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
you know? I'm so excited about it. A lot of people don't like it, but I love it. I think it's incredible.
It.
And it will keep those 40 million plus people coming to our city mm-hmm. every year.
Yes.
All right. I think that's a good transitional time for us
mm-hmm.
to do the Vegas Uni.
If I had that love, then I'd be brave enough to build this dream I have inside and shine this diamond in the rough. There is
who's
so
ready? The Vegas you need. This is where we are going to give you recommendations about things that you need to go check out in Las Vegas. So we're gonna let Ruby go first.
Cool. So a couple months ago, just for a date night, I stumbled upon Casa de Amor on Trop. Because it's close to my house and they were open late, serving late. I was craving some pasta. It was winter time and I just kind of peeked out back. It looked like there was some tiki stuff set up. And just the other day, Monday, my day off, I'm like, oh, I just want like a nice breezy cocktail. It was beautiful outside. I'm like, oh, I wonder if that tiki spot's open. We went. Tiki de Amor is what they call it. And it is so cool. And it's this guy, Michael, has owned this place for 14 years. It's super throwback inside, but outside, his fiance Alex has transformed it, and he has too, into this like kitschy tiki bar. There's this cool cabana where you can just super lounge. It almost feels like a cigar lounge where there's a TV, and then there's live music. There's like a giant octopus. The drinks are, you know, super tiki kitschy, and it's happy hour all the time. You get like half price pizza. The pizza's amazing. It's a really cool hang. There's like this amazing door from India where you can see dents from where the elephants like dented it by pushing through it. It's just really cool. There's like a lot of awesome artifacts and super local, obviously. And I can't remember the cross street. Just east of Eastern. Mm-hmm. Trop, just east of Eastern. Yeah. Definitely something to check out in the warmer months.
That is an awesome pick. You know, we can't really have enough tiki bars.
No.
You can always use another tiki bar. And tiki bars are kind of like a national trend right now. People are getting back into that again, and a lot of those people come to Las Vegas to see the tiki bars that we have here. Even though we don't have that many, the ones that we do have are amazing.
Solid.
Yeah.
So they come,
and I'm always
they come
a sucker
learn.
For the cups.
Yeah.
You know, you can get a drink for $12 or one for $30, and you can keep your ceramic tiki. And then they hold my pens.
Oh, that's a cute idea.
Well, I don't know what else to do with them. You're never going to use it again.
You don't make zombies at home in your ceramic mugs?
I don't know. I put my pens in it.
Mark, what's the Vegas you need?
I'm going with Pizzeria Monzu, which is a brand new joint. And the reason why is my good girl pal Naomi Morrow and her husband Gio just opened the spot, and it's turned into a cool hang. Great food, obviously. Nora's, right? That's the pedigree. It's the offshoot of Nora's, so everybody knows Nora's. But you know, Naomi is now singing there. Various jazz artists are singing there. And I love any kind of great food establishment that also supports our local entertainers. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's ambient noise in a way, which is cool, but awesome wine, great food, good atmosphere. And I love Naomi, so anything she does, I think, is just worthy of supporting. Her talent is incredible. She's one of the top jazz vocalists in town, and she plays the space frequently. And to see her family just sort of just crush the restaurant business in Vegas and be successful at it is something that I'm proud of. So I'm throwing them a bone with Pizzeria Monzu on Flamingo.
Freaking delicious. You know, Gio, before they opened that place, Gio had a pizza place. I think it's still there, too, called Old School Pizzeria, way out on Craig Road in North Las Vegas. Just amazing, amazing food. I'm obsessed with Vegas pizza. There's such good pizza in Las mm-hmm. Vegas. We're going to do a pizza episode very soon.
We should do a pizza party at the space and maybe invite all these restaurants to just come out and bring pizza, and we'll just get fat.
Dreams.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we can get some local craft beer guys to show up.
It'll be called Dreams.
It'll be called Dreams to become fat.
Dreams, parentheses.
Parentheses, Vegas we're pizza getting festival. Fat at the space with beer and various pizzas, parentheses, close quote.
I don't know. There's no calories in no, pizza.
None. It's a diet.
My pick is a new cocktail bar at Park MGM, which is formerly the Monte Carlo. It's called Juniper. It looks just like a nice little casino lounge off to the side for you to go get a drink before you go see a show at Park Theater or T-Mobile Arena, perhaps. But it's a great, great cocktail spot. It's a gin. I mean, they have everything. You can have whatever you want there. They'll take care of you. But they have over 80 different kinds of gin.
Wow.
Which is, to a classic cocktail enthusiast, gin is the spirit. Gin is always in every great
it's my jam.
Legendary drink. And plus, it's summer now, so it's the perfect spirit for mm-hmm. summer, too. So go check that out. they're making all kinds of inventive drinks, or you can just get like a gin and tonic with some crazy gin you never even heard about from Mexico that has agave in it, or it's nuts.
Cool.
Go try it out.
There's a gin that I've been drinking lately called Empress, and it's out of British Columbia, Canada. And it's there's a lavender kind of vibe going on with it. And when you see mm-hmm. it on the shelf, it's purple or it's blue. And then they pour it over ice. And I'm a gin and tonic guy. And the minute you put a really good quality tonic with it, the drink changes color in your glass as well.
Hmm.
But it's called Empress Gin. It's out of Canada. You know, I've got to support my Canucks.
Of course.
But I bet you they have it there. Because if it's a gin bar, it's there. Empress Gin. I'm going there, dude. I love gin.
Going and asking for it. Maybe they'll name it after you. The Empress.
Empress Chinook.
I feel like Anchorman. I love gin. I drink gin. Gin, gin, gin. Gin, gin. Purple gin. Yellow gin. I don't care what color the gin is.
Change
I just drink gin.
Change the color if you add ice.
Hey, bro, can I get one more gin, man? Change the color.
I don't know. There's like notes of something there. Like maybe lavender.
So hipstery, bro.
You could totally go be hipstery and share your tasting notes at Juniper.
I'm going to go and be like, hey, man, can I get that purple gin?
There you have it. For all information about all of these picks, go to lasvegasweekly.com. Ruby, thank you so much
for taking
time out to be with us.
I feel like we just had a cool bro hang.
That's right.
That's what we do around here.
Space. Exactly.
Go now to see Marilyn, the new musical, at Paris, Las Vegas. It's at 7 p.m. every night except Monday.
Mm-hmm.
It's dark on Monday. What a concept.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mark, what's coming up at the space that you would like to mention?
We've got some really exciting stuff planned. Brother Noland, who's a Hawaiian legend. He's a musician out of Hawaii. He's been around forever. He's coming to Vegas for the first time. He's going to play the space. And then two Broadway megastars, obviously Tony winner John Lloyd Young, who originated the role of Frankie Valli and starred as Frankie Valli in the movie. He's coming in September. And then I will announce this now. It's not on our website yet, but megastar Shoshana Bean will be coming to the space for two nights, and it's been a crazy ride. We're getting blown up. Blake Lewis from American Idol is doing a show in July. It's awesome. The talent that wants to come and play this room is fantastic, and obviously now that Ruby's here full-time, we'll get her here on a Monday night, and we've talked about that, for 2 years now?
I know.
I remember
I almost have an album together.
Yeah, good, because I remember when she left and went and did Paramore in New York. You know, I was doing Rock of Ages at the time, and I said, girl, we got to do a show at the space. Get back out here. And we talked about that 2 years ago. So now that you're here, you're definitely coming and going to sing for our peeps.
Yeah, I can see it on the horizon.
Yeah, it's time.
It's happening. Thank you both. Be sure to pick up this week's copy of Las Vegas Weekly Magazine. It's available all over the valley, and you can find this in every episode of the All the Vegas podcast at lasvegasweekly.com, as well as on iTunes and at YouTube. Thanks for listening. Drive carefully. Come back soon.